From the Ghost Knight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine, welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
It is Thursday night, and if you can hear our voices, you are exactly where you need to be. We are your hosts, Karen Frazier and Rick Hale, and this is Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. Tonight we got a really big show for everybody, and I think it'll be very interesting, and I'm going to throw it over to Karen. Karen, tell us all about it.
Well, like 2 days ago, I think. It was a couple days ago. I'm sorry, the cat is up on her hind legs licking my hand as I was talking to you, and it freaked me out. So I forgot what I was doing. I was like, what? Oh, it's the cat. Anyway, 2 days ago, Cheryl and I did a pre-record of an interview with Dr. Lynn Kitai. She is the author of Phoenix Lights and was also heavily involved in the documentary Phoenix Lights, which I have seen twice on Netflix, once in preparation for the interview. And if you don't know about the Phoenix Lights, it's probably one of the largest mass UFO sightings.
Yeah, there's definitely no mass hysteria or mass wackiness, as I like to call it. Literally hundreds of people saw this thing, if not thousands.
As a matter of fact, including, although they came out much, much later saying it, at the time they didn't, the governor of the state at the time. And a city councilwoman got like 700 calls and reports about investigating it. And so we had a great interview with Dr. Lynn the other day. And
now she's a medical doctor, right?
She is. She's a scientist. She has a science background. Her husband is also a medical doctor.
Okay.
And, so she has really picked this apart from every way possible because she wants to look at it scientifically and see what it's all about. And she's reached some, what I think are some pretty startling conclusions and some pretty fascinating conclusions. So we'll be playing that interview for you in its entirety in a little while. In the meantime, you had something to talk about?
Oh, yeah. Furthermore, with the Phoenix Lights, my brother, who has lived in Phoenix for, you know, the better part of his life, and I Facebooked him the other day and asked him if, you know, if he or any of his friends could weigh in on the subject, you know, to just let me know. And had two hits. Everybody else thought it was, you know, kind of ridiculous. But two of his friends weighed in on the subject, and it sounds pretty credible to me. I'm just going to say like their initials rather than their names. N.I. says that he was driving back from Flagstaff to Phoenix, and while driving, he saw the lights move in to the city. So, you know, this... Right. From what I understand, that it wasn't just Phoenix where they were seeing the lights, that people in New Mexico and Colorado actually were witnessing a lot of UFO activity leading up to the Phoenix Lights.
It was actually across the entire state. On the night of the mass sighting, it was across the entire state. It was the night that people were looking up at the sky anyway because of the Hale-Bopp comet. And so it was entirely across the state and in some surrounding states as well. Yeah.
Right.
And it's recurrent phenomena too, by the way.
It's what again?
Recurrent phenomena.
Yeah. I thought that I saw that there was a sighting back in November of 2010. But another friend, VC, we'll call him, he said that he got home from work, went into his backyard, saw the lights over the city, and yelled for his parents to come out and see them. So this is just two of the, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of people that actually witnessed these odd lights hanging in the sky. And there's a lot of theories on what these lights could have been. Some people say military flares coming from, you know, kind of a military...
Yeah, Dr. Lynn has something to say about that.
Yeah, coming from the military family and living near military installations, you know, military flares don't look like that. They don't hang in the sky for hours, if not days on end.
In formation. Moving.
No less. Yeah. So, you know, it's definitely one of those kind of sightings that you could put down as of yet unexplained. But the very definition of a UFO, unidentified flying object, is just that. It is identified, it is flying, and it is an object.
Right. And you can also go on to Phoenix Light. Is it phoenixlight.com, Cheryl? phoenixlights.com, is that right?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, if you search Phoenix Lights, it's the first thing that comes up in Google. Dr. Lynn has some pictures that she's taken of the light phenomena at different times, and they're all up on the website under the photographs tab, which is really fascinating. So,
Karen, did you say .com or .net?
It's .net. PhoenixLights.net.
The PhoenixLights.net.
Oh, the PhoenixLights.net. So those of you who were, you know, going on what I said, bad idea. Sorry.
Now, you know, what I want to know is, did people report any kind of, you know, abduction experiences during this time or missing time?
No.
Or,
well, she talks about missing time, but the abduction stuff, she actually expresses some opinions about the abduction phenomena as well. And mm-hmm. so I don't want to give any of that away because she had a lot to say about a lot of those things. So mm-hmm. it was really a really fascinating interview. We probably talked to her for about an hour and 15 minutes or so, I would guess, although we sort of had a little technical problem in the middle. When don't we?
Just a little one.
Yeah. Now, fortunately, I didn't miss out on this one, too. I really wanted to have the opportunity to talk to Dr. Kitai.
Yeah, well, it's okay, because like I say, it was the easiest interview I've ever done because she is so excited about her topic and has so much to say that Cheryl and I would be sending each other a little text saying, okay, I'm going to ask her this next, and she'd answer it before we would even ask the question.
Yep.
Well, hey, there you go. Not only is she a UFO witness, she's also a psychic, so there we go.
and a medical doctor. Very successful medical doctor, as a matter of fact. She was a medical correspondent for the local ABC station there, you know, and she's done some really fascinating things since then and has set aside her medical career, as a matter of fact, to look into this even more.
Now, that's passion.
I know. So here's what I think we should do. Instead of teasing people with the interview, why don't we go ahead and go to the interview, and then we can discuss it after the fact. Cheryl, are we going to have commercials before the interview, or are we just going straight in?
We're just going to have a couple of quick ones, and then no music. We'll just go straight into the interview after the commercials.
All right. Very good. So we will be back, Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. Stick around. We'll be back with Dr. Lynn Kitai and the Phoenix Lights in just a minute.
If you are a small business owner, you are paying too much for products and services. Do not spend your hard-earned cash on items you can get on trade. UTXTrade.com was formed specifically so you can trade your products or services with other companies on the network for items like advertising, computer repair, office furniture, printing, hotel stays, and much more. For more information, please visit UTXTrade.com. That's UTXTrade.com, a proud sponsor of Paranormal League of America.
Hi everyone, it's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at Paranormal UG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Station identification.
You're listening to Z-Talk. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Z-Talk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
So our guest today is somebody who is really very interesting to me. About a year ago, I'm sort of a documentary buff, and about a year ago on my Netflix, I saw a documentary that looked really fascinating called The Phoenix Light. Watched it. Called Cheryl pretty much immediately and said, we have to get this woman on our show. It's taken a year, but we have her here. So our guest tonight is Dr. Lynn Kitai. In 1995, she saw something that changed her life forever.
She was a medical doctor. She was at home in Phoenix, Arizona, when she spotted some strange lights in the sky. 2 years later, that individual sighting became a mass sighting that occurred across the state of Arizona. Since that time, Dr. Lynn has studied the phenomena, and she's produced a documentary and written a book about it called The Phoenix Lights. The conclusions that Dr. Lynn has reached are really startling, and I think that the implications extend to all mankind. So, Dr. Lynn Kitai, welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio.
Oh, thank you so much, Cheryl and Karen. It's great to be with you guys.
Yeah, what I said in my introduction is true. As soon as I watched the video, I contacted Cheryl right away, didn't I?
You did, yeah, definitely right away.
Well, I can't tell you how many people have seen it on Netflix. That is a wonderful place for people to go to. People that would not ordinarily watch anything related to UFOs or unexplained phenomena happen to see it, and many of them either wake up to the fact that they've had an experience that is real to them, and we can get into that because most things can be explained, but there are a small percentage of things that cannot, and just because we don't have the technology yet to definitively define what these things are, it doesn't mean they're not real. And you had mentioned that I had no interest or knowledge in this topic at all before a very close sighting to our home in 1995. And we're talking just not even 1,000 feet away from our home. And I happened to capture pictures of these orbs in a pyramid formation. And anybody that's interested that's listening, actually, it's really fascinating to just look at the photographic data in itself. It speaks for itself. On the phoenixlights.net website, on the photo page, I happened to catch these phenomena disappearing and didn't even know who to show the pictures to because I knew nothing about this phenomena at all. And here I was watching something that was so technically advanced, something that I never even imagined being here on Earth. And we're kind of nestled in the mountain range of Paradise Valley, and we have a panoramic view of the city skyline. We're pretty high up on the mountain, so we know what planes and helicopters and streetlights and car lights and so forth look like, and even flares. Occasionally we see those sent deployed by the military. Very different. And this is so mysterious and advanced that I wondered for 2 years what this technology was doing outside our bedroom window. And lo and behold, 2 months before the mass sighting, which took place March 13th, 1997, we're coming on the 15th anniversary this March, these orbs, and I call them an orb because the light did not extend outside the edge. The closed orbs were actually oval-shaped, like on their side, and there were three very close orbs. The light within each orb was very different than any light I'd ever seen. It was a uniform amber color throughout. It wasn't like a light bulb that has a hot spot, and it didn't glare at all. I mean, these are very, very different characteristics than anything that we know of that's man-made. At any rate, these orbs started showing up at a distance, and if you do look on the photo page at the phoenixlights.net, you'll see even in the close pictures of the orbs, interestingly enough, the same phenomena is in the background disappearing as the close orbs were disappearing. That would also occur in the distance. 2 months before the mass sighting, I caught this phenomena mile-wide, equidistant lights that were in a mile-wide span, head-on, turning into a V-shape. And it was so unnerving that the next morning, because it was so not only massive, but I hadn't had an explanation for the 95 sighting, that I called around and found air traffic controllers at Sky Harbor International Airport that saw the same thing at the same time. In fact, they were alarmed because they were about 1,000 feet altitude, and anyone that's in this Class B restricted airspace must call into the tower to alert the air traffic that they're there. And nobody had called in, and here they're viewing through high-powered binoculars 6 points of light in their own description that seemed to be attached to something, totally equidistant from each other, massive span, but they couldn't see what it was attached to, turning against the wind. And I happened to catch 6 pictures in a row of this object turning as it was turning and then moving as a unit behind South Mountain, which is south, just south of the airport. And so I asked, well, what was it? And there was silence on the other side of the phone. And then finally one of the air traffic controllers said, beats me. And I said, wait a minute, you're air traffic controllers. You're supposed to know what's in our airspace. And they had no idea. We kept in contact. I continued photographing these phenomena up into and including the night of March 13th, which unbeknownst to me it was just another night, but unbeknownst to me, thousands of people statewide, actually starting as early as 5:30 p.m., people were seeing these orbs in different formations, and other people were actually seeing craft, mile-wide silent craft that were gliding about 30 miles an hour over their heads, I mean, at rooftop level. Some people did see these phenomena take off at a tremendous speed. Incredible technology, to be sure. There is so much to the story, but the first official call came in at about 8:15, 8:20. About that time as well, there is a recorded message at the UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington, that is very detailed, from an alleged crewman from Luke Air Force Base who called in about 3 a.m. the next morning professing that this mile-wide craft was hovering right over the center of Phoenix at 7th Avenue and Indian School, for anyone who's familiar with the area, and military jets were sent out to investigate or intercept or whatever. And actually, there are witnesses that saw this happening. And as the military jets got close, not only did their machinery go haywire inside the craft themselves, but the craft that they were approaching disappeared and freaked out one of the pilots and the crewmen, said he was one of the people that helped one of the pilots out of his aircraft because he was so shaken up by it. So we're talking incredible technology here that was happening throughout the state, not just
right.
Phoenix. I mean, we're talking from upstate. Actually, people in Las Vegas saw this mile-wide craft right over Las Vegas later that night, commercial pilots. I mean, the story is just amazing. And I have other witnesses who saw the same phenomena in Native Americans, actually, in New Mexico. But this was throughout the state and lasted, by the way, until 5:30 the next morning when a Boeing crew just coming into work the next morning saw this craft hovering over the tarmac. So we're talking many, many hours and many different unexplained aerial phenomena happening at the same time, these orb formations as well as different craft. We didn't realize until a 12-year compilation of hundreds of reports that were not only given to the UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington, but also to Village Labs here in Phoenix, which was the clearinghouse at the time for the mass sighting, as well as the former Councilwoman Vice Mayor Frances Emma Barwood. She received over 700 calls.
Right.
And as well as Arizona MUFON, a couple of fellas, Mike Tanner and Bill Hamilton, who were investigating very meticulously and compiling all this data, compiled that there were actually 8 or 9 different craft that people were seeing. Now, whether it was one craft that could morph into looking differently, or it was the perspective of where the person was standing, or it was a parade of different craft, we may never know. But the fact is that if you go on the PhoenixLights.net GAP page, Geospatial Animation Project, GAP page, you can, you know, view the different craft illustrated by Larry Lowe quite beautifully, that there were different things that people were seeing throughout the state. So there was a lot going on. And by the way, serendipitously, and there were a lot of coincidences, I have to say, connected with the Phoenix Lights, on March 13th, 1997, it was a very clear, quiet night, and the Hale-Bopp comet was extremely bright in the northwest sky. So thousands of people just serendipitously were looking up at the sky purposely for a glimpse of the Hale-Bopp comet when they caught a glimpse of these phenomena. So there is so much to this story, and it wasn't just March 13th or just lights in Phoenix. It was going on for many, many hours. It was throughout the entire state, and it was happening not only prior to March 13th, but also subsequently. So there's a lot more to this story.
So has there ever been a sighting that's that large or that long-lasting, or is this pretty much it?
Well, actually, as far as the amount of people and the documentation, this sighting supposedly is one of the most important and most documented sightings in modern history. We do have, and I didn't even know, to tell you, I mean, the truth of it is that, and we could go on for hours talking about the story. I had a 750-page journal after pushing my entire professional life aside for 7 years, trying to look for a logical explanation, which I have yet to find, by the way, almost 15 years later. But I had no idea until a week after the mass sighting when there is a investigator right here in Tempe, right near ASU, Arizona State University, who is not only showing my video because serendipitously, again, I had set up an appointment because I wanted to find out what these strange phenomena were a week before the mass sighting with a field investigator from MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, for the following Wednesday. He calls up Tuesday to postpone, and the only window of opportunity I had was Friday morning at 10 o'clock. He said, fine. The night before, for me, about 8:20, when the first call came in from Paulden, Arizona, from a retired police officer, I was actually seeing one orb in the northwest sky that was very familiar, just like the other ones that I had been seeing previously. And then about an hour later, not quite an hour later, in the shortly after 9 o'clock, I was seeing one orb far south, which is actually when witnesses were seeing these phenomena down in Tucson, which is 2 hours south of Phoenix. And then shortly before 10 o'clock, suddenly the same massive formation across that, in the same location, by the way, that I had shot the 6 pictures in a row head-on, turning into a V 2 months before, appeared. And I ran outside. By the time I got out there, it had turned so that I got the 3 end lights of a giant V or triangle. And I come walking into this guy's house the next morning. To me, it was just another sighting, okay?
Right.
But I had video of it, and I walk in, and the first thing he says to me is, did you see the big mass sighting last night? And I said, excuse me? He said, oh, yes, there was, you know, hundreds if not thousands of people statewide who saw a massive mile-wide formation of lights, the formation of lights or craft, and NBC was coming to interview him in a half an hour. And I said, whoa, I used to do health reporting as a medical consultant for NBC here in Phoenix in the early 80s. And I said, I don't know what we're dealing with. I don't know if it's a hoax or military or whatever, but you know, I'm out of here, but I'm happy to share. It's not about me anyway. It's about the data. Please take a copy of the video and share it with whoever you want, you know. And little did I know that by 4:30, the first news that came on that afternoon, my video was plastered on every news station. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
So it was pretty exciting. I mean, after having had the experiences that I did previously, it was kind of exciting to show people what we had seen.
Right.
And by 9 o'clock that evening, the evening news, there were 2 other videos that are spectacular, even more than mine. One is an arrowhead. And you, if you just look at the data, if anybody's on Facebook out there, go to the Phoenix Lights Network page. And I posted a show that was on actually in 1999, Unsolved Mysteries, a wonderful report on the Phoenix Lights that shows the video. I hadn't come forward yet till 2004, but they have the arrowhead. And those lights, I mean, there's 5 lights. They're attached to something. Just look at the data. It speaks for itself. And
right.
A boomerang that is pretty spectacular. And at that point, it was like, whoa, you know, what's going on here? And a week later, I see Jim Del Toso, who was a local computer specialist, had a big lab out near ASU, and he also on the side analyzed UFO photos and had for 20 years or more, and he had a vast collection of videos and photographs from all over the world that he had analyzed, and he was showing on TV, and this is the first I had heard of this. different formations, V-formations, triangle formations of three lights from all over the world. I had no idea. This is the first I had ever heard that there were, you would ask about other mass sightings. There were mass sightings in UK. There were mass sightings, similar mass sightings in Belgium in the 80s and 90s, in Hudson Valley even decades ago, the Lubbock Lights in Texas. I had no idea that this had been going on. And when, at that point, it was, whoa, something might be going on here. I want to investigate this and try to find a logical explanation for what I had witnessed and photographed, certainly. But the more I looked, the more I found such credible data. I mean, not only the fact that this has been happening worldwide and at a faster pace, but that it has been happening since human documentation began. I mean, there are cave drawings in primitive Pakistan.
Yes.
In prehistoric caves, in Pakistan and Peru and so forth, that have long extinct animals etched out in stone. And in the sky, there's what we would call today a UFO.
Yep.
How did they know that unless they had seen something, and it's something that they, you know, had documented on the stone? And then you go further, even in the Bible with Ezekiel's wheel and so forth. And I had no idea about this. I mean, the more I started looking, I started finding this fascinating information and documenting every single day. At that point, once I found out this was happening worldwide, I pushed my entire medical career aside, successful medical career aside, I might say, and started keeping an intricate journal of everything, of media reports, witness reports, and that's, we'll get into if you'd like, very fascinating, as well as the history. And when you look at the 15th and 16th, 17th century frescoes and paintings that have people on the ground looking up at the sky at a UFO. And even some of them have beings in the UFO. And even in World War II, the Foo Fighters. I don't know if you ever heard of Foo Fighters. I know there's a singing group Foo Fighters, but, in World War II, each side was looking at the same exact phenomena that my husband and I saw up close and personal. They were going, these orbs were in different formations, in twos and threes, were flying around their aircraft from Germany and Russia and United States. And each side thought that the other side had this advanced technology, spy technology. And it wasn't until after the war that everybody realized nobody has this technology. So they've been around for a long time, and certainly these crafts that people are seeing have been documented as well. So there's a history to this and you know, a lot more, and we can get into the witness reports and what I discovered once I started talking to them as well, if you'd like.
Dr. Lynn, I have a question about the data. Now, you talked about how there's a preponderance of data out there regarding the mass sighting in 97, and you've done extensive research, for more than a decade. And when you hear the different explanations that are out there regarding what the Phoenix lights were, what do you think of those? For instance, you know, some say there's still flares were responsible for the sighting, or aircraft, explanations like that. What do you think of those explanations, and have you come to an ultimate conclusion if you believe that extraterrestrials were responsible for the Phoenix lights?
That's a great question. Firstly, I have never said what they are, only that they are.
Right.
And it's time to get this topic out in the open and we address it. We accept it, and we study it so we can find out who's driving these things and who's behind it and move forward in our own evolution. That being said, it is very frustrating at times that, and of course, you know, everybody comes from a different background, from a different upbringing, from a different belief system, and certainly there's people that either can't deal with it, don't want to deal with it, and that's okay. That's okay. Everyone in their own time. But one of the main reasons I have to share that I came forward after 7 years of anonymity with my first book, which, by the way, was a 750-page journal, ultimately, and I did a lot of soul-searching. That wasn't easy. I mean, here I am a physician. I went back to work to help put our younger son through medical school. He's a neurologist now, and I had to decide, what am I going to do with this? I mean, it was so compelling, and also the witness reports. I mean, it was just unbelievable how it touched people at such a deep level. In fact, one of the sidelines that I found out, not only, and I'll share that as well, is how the story unfolded and the explanations that started being thrown around, but one of the most fascinating things, and please remind me a little later to talk about that, were the connection between all unexplained phenomena that I discovered when I was talking to witnesses. But getting back to how it unfolded in the explanations, there was no explanation, no investigation for months. On June 18th, and most people outside of Phoenix or anyone that didn't read my book, and I hope the people will just look at it because I went to extreme lengths to get the most credible data and squeeze down. I pared down that 750-page journal of the best credible data that I discovered and documented to 230 pages, and now it's in its third print. I just came forward with what's happened since I came forward in 2004 and additional information that I never thought I would share, if we have time for that. But getting back to how the story unfolded, which was also one of the impetus, not only to let people know that they're not alone, and as a physician, to let people know it's okay to talk about this. It's healing to talk about this. Right. Because many people, millions of people, have had experiences that are real to them, and it festers if you don't share it. So that's yes. really important. No, it does.
I mean, it does. I agree.
And
yeah.
It's very healing and cathartic to share it, even with one person. If there's somebody out there that's had an experience and they just want to email me, and I have almost 20,000 emails worldwide from people since I came forward sharing their stories, and just sharing is very cathartic. So that's really important. That was one of the reasons I felt it was really most important to come forward. But another reason was there was so much misinformation, so much disinformation out there, and especially when the USA Today article came out on June 18th, 1997, it opened up our sighting to international scrutiny. We were within hours, it was on every news station, it was on every morning show. We were deluged by media from all over the world by the next morning. I mean, it was unbelievable how quickly this got out there, because it was such a credible sighting with so many thousands of people, and we're estimating over 10,000 people saw this, and very credible people, I mean, military and pilots and air traffic controllers and doctors and lawyers and et cetera. Right. Saw this and were willing to talk about it, that something spectacular happened, and especially when the media came and started talking to the witnesses, they too were aghast that there was no investigation, no explanation. How could that be? And it's something so extraordinary. Traverses at low altitude, rooftop, the entire state, and there's no investigation. I mean, give me a break, okay? So, interestingly, okay, and I'm just sharing how the story unfolded. The very next day, the former governor, Fife Symington, called a press conference saying that they found the culprit. That's how they put it in the media. And everybody took it very seriously. And when they started the press conference, he marches out one of his aides with a giant alien head and made a mockery out of the sighting. Mm. And I have to tell you, at that point, not only was it very bizarre that all of a sudden, 5 months after the death, 4 months, you know, whatever, June 19th, 97, after there was nothing, okay, in fact, people that tried to get in touch with the government and the military, you know, first of all, you can read it in my book, I mean, I have conversations that I had with the military, they had no idea. They were just as curious as everyone else. And, you know, the governmental officials would say, what, something happened on March 13th? Suddenly, he comes marching out this aide with an alien head and making fun of the whole thing. It really offended many, many people. And, you know, at that point, I have to say that, you know, it was kind of a turning point, because especially when you're investigating this and you know that something isn't right here. And then about a month later, on July 24th, I get a call, and I had checked all the military bases. And at that point, they had said no planes were up in the air after 7 p.m. Okay, that was their official statement. And then suddenly I get a call from the head of PR at the Air National Guard, and she says, oh, Dr. Lynn, I think we know what those lights were back in March. And I was excited. I thought, oh, great. You know, I wanted a logical explanation to explain it away. And she says, nobody looked. She said, do you believe nobody ever looked at the log for visiting Air National Guard? And the Maryland Air National Guard were in town sending off flares in Operation Snowbird, which I've come to understand means diversionary tactical maneuver. So I have no doubt that flares might have been sent off to divert attention away from the true unknowns. But she says that must be what some people saw. That was her exact words.
Some people.
Some people, right. Yeah. Now, I had not shared. I mean, it's very interesting, and I'm just telling the facts here. And I have, everything documented verbatim. And I had never told the military what I had been seeing. I just was curious about March 13th. And I said to her, well, when were they in town? When was the Maryland Air National Guard in town? And she said, March 1st to the 15th. And I said, were they in town in January? She says, oh, no. I said, are you sure? She says, oh, absolutely not. I said, well, I have photographs, 35-millimeter photographs of the same exact phenomena in the same exact location 2 months before the mass sighting, confirmed the next morning by air traffic controllers as hovering in Class B restricted airspace. She said, oh, you never told me that.
Interesting.
And then I said, and by then I had educated myself, because again, I was looking for any logical explanation and I wanted to know what flares look like. And I had been educated to the fact that, I said to her, and you're trying to tell me that flares, military illumination flares, that you're saying this was, that cannot keep a formation. They're on parachutes and they have huge smoke trails that are illuminated by the flare itself, and they're haphazard. They go with the wind and they fall to the ground.
And they glare. 5 minutes or so.
Yeah. And they're illuminating the area, right? You're trying to tell me that flares that cannot keep a formation for more than a couple of minutes traverse the entire state in a V, in an equidistant rock solid V formation for hours. And there was silence, and then she said, I have a call coming in, I'll get back to you. I'm still waiting, and it's almost 15.
Well, maybe she'll call you soon. Maybe she'll call the night.
Yeah. Right. Well, and so at that point, it was like another red flag's going up here, and I'm thinking, whoa, okay, if it's flares, okay, and again, I was open, okay, if it's flares, even though it looked totally different than any flares I had ever seen, or the characteristics, do it again. Okay. Now I knew that I had pictures not only from March 13th, and if you look at my video of the three points of light, they're equidistant from each other and they're rock solid in a V formation, as well as 2 months before the mass sighting, okay, in the same location, and 2 years before the mass sighting in the same location.
Right.
The same phenomena. Somebody did it three times. Do it again. If it's military, do it again. Well, I wasn't the only one. There were a number of other people who wanted a reenactment. In fact, the former councilwoman, vice mayor, who did not see the sighting, but she had so many calls, like I said, over 700, from her constituents inquiring, even a public safety issue, why isn't there investigation? She, in May, a couple months later, she mentions in a council meeting, what's going on here, maybe we should investigate, and she was plastered. I mean, at that time, I have to say, we are much more open now to these phenomena and people reporting, particularly with the internet, and going back to the Phoenix Lights mass sighting itself, it was the first mass sighting that had chat rooms on the internet. Okay, So as far as documentation and really getting out there, now, particularly with cell phones and, capturing, unusual sites worldwide and the internet, getting it out there in a split blink of an eye, we've really come full circle, although there's still ridicule and criticism and discrediting. But at that time, It was horrible. I mean, I'm telling you, I was so thankful that I had stayed anonymous, because anybody that came forward outside of the few, because the media here, I have to tell you, were wonderful, and there were witnesses that did come forward here, and they took it seriously. But outside of Phoenix, it was pretty bad, and when Councilwoman Barwood came with her question, she was plastered. I mean, they made jokes about her in the media, and especially the newspaper, and it was awful. I mean, it really was awful. So, you know, as far as that goes, it was. She actually ran for Secretary of State on a platform to get answers for the Phoenix Lights. And one of the things that she was asking for was a reenactment. Well, anyway, 3 years later, right before the third anniversary, on March 7th, 2000, it was announced that three Air National Guards, I believe it was New York, Michigan, and California, were coming into town to show everybody the Phoenix Lights. Now, they must have been practicing for months or whatever, because they tried to make a triangle, and it was upside down. It fell apart immediately. Again, if you go, you know, on our website, there's a wonderful report, a CNN report on the news page, that says it all. I mean, you could just see by the footage, it's a riot. I mean, they have huge smoke trails, and they fall apart immediately, and it's just nothing. Nothing like the videos that we captured during the mass sighting, which, by the way, were the only hard evidence that we have for the Phoenix Lights. There was an earlier video that somehow mysteriously has disappeared from the scene, but there's a handful of videos around 10 o'clock, and, you know, that was really the only thing that they could debunk. I mean, the stories are just hearsay, and they could just brush that off or say people are crazy, or it's, right, you know, an advanced craft, or it's aircraft, you know, a bunch of aircraft. Some people said it was helicopters. Some people, and by the way, there was no sound. I mean, that was the other thing. It was so eerie. There's so many people to have this massive, over a mile. Some people said it was 2 miles. There were people that were driving up I-10, which is a major highway between Phoenix and Tucson, and this thing was right above them. And the arm span of the wings were extended over into the fields on both sides of the highway. I mean, it was just so massive. And, you know, so anyway, the only explanation that came out the next morning after I talked to the Air National Guard PR, it was major headlines. The Phoenix Lights were flares. And again, 3 years later, they did this reenactment. And that really proved to many people, once they announced that they were reenacting it, and they did this flare deployment, and it was nothing, nothing like the real Phoenix Lights, it really convinced the witnesses here, and myself included, that it wasn't flares. That's for sure. Okay? And the fact that they came up with, you know, this story, and to today has never been reenacted 15 years later, although the same phenomenon is being seen worldwide, speaks for itself.
So, Dr. Lynn, you talk about how those who came forward were pretty much ostracized, such as the councilwoman. You talked about how the governor at the time pretty much mocked the thought that the phenomena could have been caused by extraterrestrials. Can you talk about the change of heart that the governor had after the fact? Because I think that's a really, really important part of the story.
Absolutely. And again, we don't know what they are. You know, you can speculate that these phenomena can be interdimensional, which, by the way, that's, you know, from my own close experience, when these orbs disappeared, they actually faded and imploded from the outside inwards. It was mechanical. I mean, this is advanced technology. Where did it go? It felt like it was still there, even though we didn't see it anymore. So we can talk about, you know, interdimensional. We can talk about the possibility of interstellar. We can talk about time travelers. We can, you know, whatever. There's a lot of speculation. We don't know for sure. But the fact is, it's not earthly. That's what I say. It's unearthly. And actually, the governor came forward, which is very interesting. After he had mocked the sighting in 1997, and again, the timing was very, very interesting because it was the day after this USA Today article came out. And then right after the 10th anniversary of the mass sighting, he divulges that he actually saw the Phoenix Lights craft, which I have to say lent a lot of credibility to the fact that something really spectacular, and he in his own words said it was otherworldly.
Right.
So that was also another turning point. I have to give him kudos for coming forward and being brave enough and courageous enough to divulge that. Certainly it was 10 years later, but, and a lot of people still were angry because if he had said that at the beginning, it would have been a whole different story. But the fact is he finally did come forward, which is wonderful, and, and lends the credibility. Now, on the other side, a lot of people are still blowing off the hard evidence. The only hard evidence are the videos around 10 o'clock. And again, I just urge people to take a look at it because they can decide for themselves. Because when you compare them with flares, there is just no comparison. So we do have not only the videos around 10 o'clock, and the boomerang video, by the way, which is pretty spectacular. I mean, it's just awesome. And you take a look at that. I mean, it's those lights look rock solid, although they've been analyzed, and my stuff has been analyzed. I went to extreme lengths to have my photographic evidence. I would not have come forward, actually, if I didn't know that I had and feel obligated as an educator. I've also for 30 years, for your listeners, I mean, over 30 years, I've been donating my own time and monies to community education. I have a company, Health Education Learning Programs, that produces video and workbook curriculums on the reality of vital health issues for the classroom. Discovery Education is distributing them as we speak, and felt obliged. I mean, once I knew I had this documentation and continued to take photographs, again, if you look at the photo page on the phoenixlights.net, that data is pretty spectacular, and I had gone to extreme lengths to have it explained to me. The University of Arizona Optical Science Department, the Consciousness Study Department, Arizona State University, Mathematics, Astronomy, Anthropology Departments, Geology Department, as well as the renowned Brooks Institute of Photography in Santa Barbara, and no one could give me an answer to what these were. And so when you have that kind of data and you know what happened to thousands of people statewide, what do you do with that? And it really, again, going back to why I finally came forward, in good conscience, I couldn't stick what I had in a drawer and try to compile the most credible data and squeeze it down to 230 pages at the time, and came forward in 2004 while I was chief clinical consultant of the Imaging and Wellness Center at the Arizona Heart Institute, and haven't looked back. I mean, it was just mind-boggling once I came forward and people really took a look. And that was another main reason I came forward. So if I can be a credible voice, if people actually look at the data, then I've done my job. And when people look at it and realize that there is a plethora of credible material out there that cannot be explained or denied, then we can start moving forward with this. And, of course, going back to what I said earlier, is that science really needs to take a look at this in a credible, open way so we can move forward and really find out what these phenomena are, who's behind them, and get on with this and move forward in our own evolution. So there's a lot more work to be done, but certainly after the book came out, I was approached by a number of filmmakers who wanted to do a documentary, and coming from my video and workbook background, I really wanted to do something visually, but I was working 7 to 7 at the Arizona Heart Institute, radio programs like The Sense of the Night, as well as Borders and Barnes & Noble book tours on the weekends. I had no time. And one of the filmmakers who serendipitously was actually graduated from the Brooks Institute of Photography, his parents are here, and he said, "I'm bringing my equipment and we're getting started." I said, "Whoa, I don't have the time." And plus the fact that I had stayed anonymous for 7 years. I didn't know if the professors I worked with, witnesses who had shared their stories confidentially on the internet with me and email, if they would share and be interviewed. And I said, you know what, let me make some calls first. And every single person except one who came aboard later immediately said yes, and they were enthusiastic about it, and you saw the documentary. So we started doing production, and by June, he came in May, and by June it was so overwhelming that I had to make a choice, and I really felt it was very, very vital that I complete the documentary. And I left the Arizona Heart Institute, and we've been going full straight ever since. We were on our, it keeps evolving as new witnesses come forward, as new sightings come forward. The governor is now in an astronaut, Edgar Mitchell is in the documentary. We've won over a dozen international film festival awards, which is unheard of for a documentary, and certainly one of the genre. So we're very proud of that. And, I just think it's really important if people are interested, and again, you know, everyone in their own time, but the data is there. If you want to learn and grow and be prepared, because who's preparing us? There is so much misinformation, disinformation, discrediting. I mean, like I said, there was a recent show that just aired on the History Channel, and they're still discrediting the hard evidence. I mean, it's just mind-boggling to me that there is real, solid, hard evidence that has been analyzed as much as it can be analyzed, and still there's misinformation and disinformation out there. So, that's why I hope that people will take a look at the data and decide for themselves.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the photographs. I've looked at them before, but, you know, one of the witnesses in the documentary described them as looking like ceiling canister lights.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really good way to describe them. I'm sitting here looking at your picture and looking at my ceiling canister lights. And
right.
Yeah, so that wasn't a question. I actually did have a question, but I just as I was looking at it, I thought, wow, yeah, that does look like
No, it's true. I mean, that's the other thing, too. You're absolutely right. Uh-huh. Because when this thing went over people's heads, and we're talking, they were standing right under. We have a fella who was standing right under one of these canisters of lights, and he talks about the lights swimming within this canister. Mm-hmm. I mean, just so otherworldly, like nothing that you can even imagine. And it was massive. I mean, this orb was massive right over his head. Okay. And by the way, he was seeing it about 10 o'clock when I was photographing it. He saw the three points of light. And you know, when you hear their own descriptions, and that's why it's so amazing. I hope people will take the opportunity to either look at the documentary and hear from the witnesses themselves. I think it's really important to hear their heartfelt and detailed descriptions, because this is something that was so out of our realm of reality that it needs to be shared, and I think it's really important to be shared. And it's something that's been, you know, other cultures. And let me go back a second. 6 months before the mass sighting, and I mentioned that there are a lot of serendipitous stuff. 6 months before the mass sighting, I was invited to present my substance abuse prevention education program at the Gila River Indian Reservation. They have one school there. And I befriended, you know, some of the people there. And after the mass sighting, because I noticed, and if you look at the photo page, my pictures consistently, these phenomena keep popping up right where South Mountain and the Estrella Mountain Range, which is miles behind it, intersect. There's a point where they intersect. And the Gila Indian Reservation is, Native American Reservation is right in the basin between South Mountain and the Estrellas. So I called them up after the mass sighting, and I said, you know, it's interesting that my pictures, you know, indicate, if we look at the data, that these phenomena are, like, popping up in that area. Did you happen to see any strange lights on March 13th? And they started to giggle. And I said, is that funny? And they said, are you kidding? We've been looking up at them for centuries.
Oh,
We call them sky people, light beings. It's part of their culture. I had no idea.
Oh.
This is the first I heard of that. This, not only do many indigenous cultures believe that these orbs, okay, are otherworldly intelligences coming to give them guidance and comfort and wisdom. Some of them think that they're spirit world coming to give them comfort and so forth and inspiration. But many of them, the Hopi, right here in Arizona, actually have protocols to invite them in. And the Gila Native American said to me, why do you think we call the Estrella's got their name? From the Spaniards, they called it, Estrella means star in Spanish. And they call the Estrella's gateway to the stars. They believe that there's a portal or a gateway there.
Well, you know,
which
I was
brings
just,
another dimension into the.
Yeah,
you know.
I was just actually just I just typed to Cheryl in Skype. It's really interesting to me how many of these types of things, if you go back to Roswell, how many of these types of things occur in the southwestern United States? What's the
But they're happening worldwide. They're happening worldwide. I mean, you know, it's you know, some of the major sightings have happened here, but again, I mean, they Hudson Valley, New York, major flap. They call them a flap when they happen for weeks or whatever. And again, hundreds, if not thousands, of people seeing similar phenomena there. And Belgium. I mean,
yes.
the Belgian. I have to tell you, the Belgian sighting is very unique in that. They actually were very open, unlike the United States, not only in reporting the sightings, but the military, civilians, university all got together to try to decipher and study these phenomena. I mean, that's a model for what should happen, okay?
Right.
And they came to the United States, and they even asked the United States, are you doing this? And the United States flatly denied that we were.
Right.
But besides that, it's happening all over the world. It's happening in Peru. It's happening in Israel. It's happening in, I mean, there are similar phenomena worldwide, again, since human documentation began. So it's not just the Southwest, but
right.
For whatever reason, the Phoenix Lights. And again, when I came forward in 2004, and I say this in all humility, the official and accepted, other than in the Phoenix area, of course, and with the witnesses, but the official and the accepted explanation for the Phoenix sites were flares, because they promoted that explanation so much.
Right.
Somebody wanted that out there so much, okay, that was the accepted explanation. Now, can you imagine for someone like myself how frustrating that would be?
I can imagine very much so, yes. Yeah.
So that really propelled me to come forward as well, just to set the record straight, okay?
Right.
Just to give the rest of the story, and not to say that flares weren't sent off, because I have no doubt that the military, who was very well aware, okay, if we, you know, look at the data, in fact, many people called Luke Air Force Base to, you know, report the sightings, and they actually gave them the number of the UFO Reporting Center, and yet in the media they said they got no calls.
Mm.
And so did the police department.
Right.
And in our documentary, and now in the book, I share, and I just got an email recently from another Phoenix police operator, 911 Phoenix police operator, and there's a wonderful lady in the documentary who came up to me after a presentation, and she said, you know, I heard that the police said they didn't get many calls on the night of March 13, 1997. I said, well, that's what they say. And she says, well, I'm here to tell you, I just retired, and I'm ready to share the truth. And she was wonderful. I mean, she really tells it all. I mean, not
right.
only the fact that they got hundreds of calls. I mean, they're it was mind-boggling, the havoc that was going on in the 911 center that night. And it was very consistent. And most people describe 5 to 7 lights. And if you look at my pictures 2 months before the mass sighting, especially the one with one in the center and two are on each side with
mm-hmm.
two underneath. I mean, that's exactly what people described
right.
on March 13th. But this was 2 months before. Okay.
Right.
So there's amazing, amazing hard evidence that still has not really been acknowledged. I mean, some people like yourself will share it, and I've shared it on the website and the book and the documentary, but that still isn't out there yet, really.
Right.
People don't realize that there's a lot more hard evidence that's been kind of brushed under the carpet or blown off as flares or whatever, but it's true hard evidence for anybody that really does their homework.
Right.
At any rate, You know, not only did she share that they got hundreds of calls, but the Phoenix police helicopters were out investigating as well. So there is so much to the story. It's just so fascinating how there was so much going on behind the scenes, and the military was very well aware of what was going on. So if they, you know, did send off flares, whatever, they're certainly not going to send those flares over a populated area.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So let's be real. Okay. So if they sent some over, you know, on the North Pack Range or whatever, but I have to tell you one thing that's really interesting too, if you look at the data, not one report. Now we're talking 15 years later, other than military, there has not been one civilian report of the same formations that showed up around 10 o'clock that they claim were flares on the south side of the Estrella Mountain Range. Only on the north side.
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean? So they're saying that they were sending off flares behind,
right.
You know what I mean, going down to Tucson.
Right.
But there's not one person, and we're talking hours before of people looking up at the sky, not only at the Hale-Bopp Comet, but also at these strange phenomena. You would think one person would have seen flares, but there's not one report.
You would
not
think.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the
not
things,
one.
Yeah, you just mentioned one of the things that I wanted to ask you about. I think that the timing of the mass sighting is very interesting because there were people who were going to already be looking up at the sky because of the
right,
hail
bomb. Exactly.
So do you have any theories as to why that timing is
Well, you know, that's a very good question. Not only for the fact, again, that when people are looking up at the sky, it seems many times there are unexplained phenomena up there as well. If you look back at 1991, the eclipse in Mexico, when thousands of people throughout Mexico were looking skyward to catch a look at the eclipse, that's when UFOs were showing up. I mean, it was just awesome, and a lot of people got pictures of them.
If you are a small business owner, you are paying too much for products and services. Do not spend your hard-earned cash on items you can get on trade. UTXTrade.com was formed specifically so you can trade your products or services with other companies on the network for items like advertising, computer repair, office furniture, printing, hotel stays, and much more. For more information, please visit UTXTrade.com. That's UTXTrade.com. A proud sponsor of Paranormal League of America.org.
Hi, everyone. It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for Paranormal Talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
The competition has taken notice.
Oh my God!
Good luck keeping up with us.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
One of the things I found really fascinating in my search for a logical explanation and answers to what happened here statewide was when I spoke with the witnesses. There were a few of them that shared with me that they had had childhood near-death experiences that was reawakened by the mass sighting. And I found that not only very curious, but I did too. And I go into my near-death experience when I was 8 years old in great detail in my book, and it was really a life-changing, life-altering experience. And as I was talking to the witnesses, it occurred to me maybe there possibly was a connection between all unexplained phenomena, whether it was a near-death experience, an out-of-body experience, an unexplained aerial phenomena, that had a mystical light associated with the experience. And again, once I started looking, I started finding such credible university-based information and data. A study was done at the University of Connecticut decades ago called the Omega Project by Dr. Kenneth Ring, and there were other projects going on and studies going on across the United States, finding a true connection between all unexplained phenomena, not only in the experience itself, and I lay out very simply in the book so that people can really get a feel for the similarity between all unexplained phenomena, but the most profound thing to me was in realizing and hearing over and over again, not only from people that had other, you know, near-death experiences, but certainly from the witnesses themselves statewide, the impact, the positive enlightenment, the awakening that occurred within so many of the witnesses. It was just unbelievably mind-boggling how it affected the person at a very, very deep level. I started calling all unexplained phenomena ups, UP and unexplained phenomena, because they are ups. I mean, the positive transformation that takes place within an individual who truly experiences an up experience, it's life-altering. They are never the same. And I have to say that many, many of the witnesses till today, I mean, I still get emails almost every day. It's amazing that people either come across the documentary and the book on Amazon.com or in the bookstore or on Netflix, and it reawakens their experience from March 13th or another experience that they might have had elsewhere. And, you know, they realize and share with me how it changed their worldview forever. That they know, they just know that we're not alone in the universe. And one of the messages, by the way, and this is also important to impart, that many of the witnesses, not only of the Phoenix Lights, but if you read the data and the research of near-death experiencers who have come back from the dead and share their experience, they come back with a very, very strong message. And many of the people here had that message as well. I mean, not only did they change their eating habits, some of them became vegetarian, other people went into the peace movement, others were into the environmental movement. A very strong message to wake up. Something is telling us to wake up to what we're doing to the earth, to our planet, and to ourselves before it's too late. Mm-hmm. And that we have that choice, and it's up to us to fulfill our destiny. And many people, like myself, feel a compelling urgency to share that message and to wake other people up that perhaps haven't had that experience, or that bury it, or that blow it off, or whatever, and try to just give that understanding to people that something out there has a connection with us, and everything is connected. We are all connected to the earth and to the universe and to each other much more intimately than we can ever imagine. And everything that we do is that each individual does, for the positive or negative, is really important, and to be mindful of that, and to be mindful of what we're doing to our beautiful planet. I mean, that is a very strong message, and it's just being told over and over again. So I'm not saying everything out there is benevolent, but certainly what happened here, and by the way, it's important to impart that in almost 15 years now, there has not been one not one report, to my knowledge, and I'm pretty intimately involved with this investigation, of harm, threat, or abduction associated with the Phoenix Lights event.
Right.
And that in itself is very telling. So for whatever reason they came on that particular day, it certainly woke us up to the fact that there's something out there that is beyond what we know, beyond our reality. And not only were waking us up to their presence in a very gentle, caring way, and if you look at the data as well around the world, they just show themselves. I mean, they haven't hurt anyone, and certainly other people might argue that they've been abducted or whatever. I don't get into that. I don't know about that. That's not my expertise. And I have to say that Dr. Gary Schwartz, who's the head of the Consciousness Study Department down at the University of Arizona and world renowned for his work with mediums and consciousness study, says something very poignant in the documentary. He says, if you're fearful of something, and you see something you're fearful of, how do you think you're going to react?
Right.
Okay? That's first of all. And Dr. Ruth Hover, who is a PhD psychologist in Fountain Hills, close to Phoenix, and she's been running a group of contactees, which they, you know, call people that believe that they've had contact with other alien races or beings, for at least 20, 30 years. And, you know, even people that are fearful, once they talk about it and they discuss it and they go through it, and Dr. John Mack, by the way, who was the head of the PEER group at Harvard University, a psychiatrist who studied this phenomena extensively and has several books out there. He is no longer with us, unfortunately. In fact, he was the first person I spoke with before I came forward in February of 2004 down at the University of Arizona Tucson Medical Center. And he, too, had come full circle with people who had so-called abductions that with therapy and with really, even if they were traumatized, because we have no reference for it. As I mentioned earlier, who's preparing people for any kind of contact with other intelligences?
Well, Hollywood,
you know, they freak out, and what do they show us in Hollywood? They show us fearful threat, and harm, and what Dr. Ruth Hover said, and which is also a very poignant statement, is when someone shares their experience, it tells more about them than it does about the experience itself. If someone is fearful of something, how do you think they're going to react? As Dr. Gary Schwartz said, they're going to be afraid and freak out. If someone is an angry type personality, they're going to be, how dare they do that to me? If someone is open, as I was, because when I saw those close orbs, and there's a whole story to that too, which I am now sharing finally after over a dozen years keeping it private. But if the data can help get us to the next step and open the door a little bit to this new reality, then I hope it can help. But the pictures that I took in 1995 with the close sighting, and let me describe that again. When my husband first called me to our big picture window, and we're pretty high on the mountain, and again, very familiar with what's out there, planes and helicopters and streetlights and car lights and flares.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually saw it first, and he's a physician as well and very skeptical to begin with. And he called me out of a bath to come over quick to the window, what is this? And a little below us, over very treacherous property behind another house, were these three orbs in a pyramid formation, one on top and two closely aligned underneath. And I have to say that, when you see something like that, it affects you for the rest of your life. I mean, it was like nothing that I could ever imagine being here on Earth, and yet it was there. And I didn't want to move. And that's why people say, why weren't there other pictures? Well, first of all, for the, the mass sighting, first of all, we didn't have cell phones with cameras in them yet. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So unless somebody was carrying a camera around while they're out and about, nobody was doing that, okay? Plus the fact day, and I'm lucky that I did have a camera because I had my camera on the corner of my room because I had seen so many sightings before then. And I was prepared. But most people, when they saw the sight, were in awe.
I bet.
They were mesmerized. They couldn't move. And I have to say, with that 95 sighting, I was too. I couldn't move. I mean, I thought to myself fleetingly, boy, I'd love to get my video camera, but it was downstairs. I don't know how long this is going to last. So I tried to take everything in mentally.
Mm-hmm.
The size, the shape, the color. They were about 3 to 6 feet each, depending on how close they were. They were oval shape, on like an egg on its side. Very close, three separate orbs, and I call them an orb because the light did not extend outside the edge. And again, the light within each orb was very different than anything I'd ever seen. It was a uniform amber color. It didn't glare. Every other light I noticed immediately glared. These didn't. Very soothing, very mesmerizing. And as I'm intently looking at them, I thought, if I don't get a picture of this, nobody's going to believe it.
Okay? Right.
So I run to my closet to grab my 35 millimeter that I have ready for sunsets, and I have a couple of cool sunset pictures actually on the photo page on the phoenixlights.net that have a cigar-shaped object on two different rolls, two different months in the same spot.
Okay. Wow.
Which I did not see. I did not see, by the way, when I was taking the sunset, but they're in the negative. They're on the negative. But at any rate, I go to grab my 35 millimeter. My cousin calls me back. He says, get over here quick. One of them is disappearing. And as we watch the top orb slowly, meticulously, kind of implode from the outside inward, just getting smaller and smaller, mm-hmm. like a machine, like a mechanical, mm-hmm. smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, like purposely, and then until it was like a dime. And then I stepped out on the balcony, but I have to tell you, once it disappeared, it felt like it was still there.
That's
it was
interesting.
Bizarre. It was bizarre. But I stepped out on the balcony, got a quick picture of the two bottom orbs, and I have that posted on the photo page on the phoenixlights.net. And as intently as I was looking at these orbs, and it took me a long time to share this with anyone until after the mass sighting, it felt like something was watching me. And going through my mind, as I'm standing there, I'm thinking, who are you? What are you? Mm-hmm. Do you know that I'm here? I'd love to meet you. And the next thing I remember, the left bottom orb started to disappear, and I quickly shot a picture of that. And that was the only one that turned out at the time, but it was an incredible photograph that confirmed, because I caught one half disappeared. You can see it right there. One half disappeared and one's still there. The left one is half disappeared and the right one is still there. So I had documentation, but I didn't even know who to show it to. I knew no one who was interested in the topic, and I knew nothing about the topic at all. In fact, because of the abduction and scary movies and all that, I mean, the only movies I ever saw was E.T. and Close Encounters, and we have two grown men now, but at the time they were kids, and we watched the original Star Trek series because it was, so compelling and the messages were so good. But I didn't even know who to show it to, so I kept it to myself and wondered, you know, for 2 years what this was all about. Well, about a year after the mass sighting, there was another sighting here. We showed that in the documentary, which was unbelievable. It was very different than March 13th. It was straight lines and mirror images, and the final thing was this giant triangle, again, of three lights in the same spot, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I had been told, and I really, really stayed anonymous. Nobody knew who I was except a handful of people. And they were kind enough to keep my anonymity because I really wanted to do my homework. I really wanted to research this, try to find a logical explanation. And when I couldn't, after many years, it was like, now what do you do? But when I had actually the weekend before this sighting, it was, I mean, there's so much more to the story, but I'll share this part with you because it's very interesting. There was fog. There is never fog in Phoenix. We have, like, such low humidity. You know, it's mm-hmm. like unheard of to have fog, and it was very eerie. You could not see beyond our street that weekend. It was January of 1998, and that whole weekend, it was really eerie. Even my husband, who didn't want to talk about the close sighting, even said to me, you know, they could be there watching, and we don't even know, you know, because it was really like a wall of fog. It was very bizarre. You just don't have fog in Phoenix. But at any rate, it had dissipated a little bit, and by Monday, we were standing out on the balcony, and while I'm talking to him, and I hadn't seen the Phoenix lights, nothing remotely similar since the mass sighting, and suddenly two orbs pop up behind his head, and they were kind of muted because of the fog, but it was like, whoa, is that them, you know? And again, I had gone down to the University of Arizona, and I called them the next morning, and they had told me that I would have to get new equipment because my equipment was so, it was like really cheap equipment, and they advised me what to do, and I went out because I thought if they do come back, I should have better equipment, and I went out and got a Pentax top of the line camera and a telelens and the whole bit, and that night they did come back, and I got spectacular pictures there on the website as well on the photo page, and I thought, you know what, I just had a feeling, even though it was still foggy out there, but I just had a feeling they might come back a third night, so I alerted Village Labs, and I said, you know what, why don't you tell the other videographers, which coincidentally enough were situated north, south, east, and west, to be on the ready with their cameras. So they started appearing. It was like Close Encounters with the ship lands, like da 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 da. I mean, it was just unbelievable. Well, here we had four different people at four different locations, north, south, east, and west, with the same data. And I had been advised to contact the Navy optical physicist in Washington, D.C., Dr. Bruce McAbee, because he was doing analysis as well, and I wanted an outside opinion and another opinion. And I would have gone anywhere to have people.
Yeah.
I just wanted an answer.
Yeah.
But at any rate, I sent him the four videos, and as an afterthought, I sent him the first and last picture from the close sighting of 1995 and to see if he could tell me what those close orbs were. And he gets in touch with me a couple weeks later and he said, how long was that sighting in 95? I said, I don't know, 2-3 minutes. He said, are you sure? I said, I don't know, that's what I remember. I said, it was a few years ago. He said, why don't you ask your husband, who, by the way, would never talk about it. I mean, he just didn't want to talk about it. It's amazing how different people deal with it differently.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But I finally sat him down and I said, you know, do you remember how long, that sighting was? He said, I don't know, 2-3, maybe 4 minutes tough. So I went back to Dr. McAbee and I told him that. He said, that's impossible. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, first of all, look at the pictures. And if you look on the photo page, you're looking at the photo page now?
I'll pull it back up.
At the photo page?
Yeah, I'm going to pull it back up.
And it really is a visual, but if you look at the first and the last picture, not only did he notice, and that was the first time that I realized it as well, because he really went into intensive research and analysis on these pictures, not only did he notice that in the background, while I was taking the close orbs, the same exact phenomena in a line was disappearing at a distance in the same exact location, again, as 2 years later, 2 months before the mass sighting and during the mass sighting. And if you can see, the first picture is there are four orbs in the background, and the last picture there are two orbs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Not only that, but he says to me, look at the skyline, which I would have never done, ever. And I said, okay. He says, there are many more lights on in the first picture that are off in the last picture. And he said, that doesn't happen in a couple minutes. He said, I'd like you to do an experiment. And he had me go out on the balcony, and he said, on different nights, shoot the landscape, the skyline, standing approximately where you were standing in 95, every hour one night, then every half hour another night, then every 15 minutes, and let's see when the lights, and we're talking groups of lights, not just individual lights, we're talking groups of lights that were on in the first picture that are off in the last picture. Let's see when they start going out. Well, I usually take a bath between 7 and 8 at night when we're home. And so let's be conservative and say my husband called me out of the bath at 8 o'clock. And the first light started going out at 9 o'clock. The last picture is indicative of 10:30, 11 o'clock. Now, at the time, I had no idea what he was talking about. I could not wrap my head around any of this. And he says to me, can I present this case at the upcoming 1999 MUFON International Symposium in Washington, D.C.? I said, Dr. McAbee, this is your baby. You're the one that discovered this. I would have never even had a clue. Do whatever you want with it, but please keep my name out of it. Please keep me anonymous, which he did. Now, okay. He presented the case in 1999, and I'm just sharing it for the first time in the latest edition, the third edition of my book that came out this past year, because I think the data may be important. He presented the case as the first photographic evidence ever of missing time.
Wow, really?
Yes.
That's
very
cool.
Interesting. It is?
Yes. Yes. And what I shared with you is what I remember. And it doesn't even matter. I mean, you know, what he has even said is that the important part is what I've done with it since, which is the important part. I mean, something has inspired me personally to give up my medical career, write a book, produce a documentary out of my own heart and pocket, as well as now I'm working on a curriculum, and that's really the dearest thing to my heart and my passion for over 30 years is a curriculum from fifth grade through high school, and we're actually doing a pilot program as we speak on this topic. There is nothing. There is nothing. In fact, that's what first propelled me to do the documentary. You know, not only the fact that people said that they would do it, but at that time, I was invited to, from parents that had seen me at Barnes & Noble, set up a presentation at one of the leading middle schools here, which I was amazed that they would even touch
right.
the topic. But
right.
I have to tell you, not only was it the last period of the day, and there were 200 middle school kids, you could hear a pin drop. They thirst for this knowledge. And I realized there is nothing. We're talking zip in our history books about this topic. Nothing. And every kid there, when I asked, does anybody believe that we're alone in the universe, not one hand went up. When I asked, does anybody believe that we are not alone in the universe, every hand went up. They are so open to this. And I have been very excited to get a comprehensive curriculum that just, you know, touches the surface but introduces the kids to crop circles, which, by the way, I'm working with a senior math professor at ASU who introduced me to crop circles. He actually handed me a crop circle that I have in my book of three orbs that are dissected by an equilateral triangle.
Hmm.
Which is what I was looking at in 95. Okay.
I've seen that crop circle, I believe.
Have you seen that one?
Yeah,
okay.
I have.
Okay. And when he analyzed it to help me out with the math part of this curriculum, he was amazed at how many equilateral triangles are in this crop circle. It's very complex. And when you look at true crop circles, and certainly there are a lot of fake ones out there, but when you look at true crop circles, they are so complex, and there are changes in the in whatever the wheat or the corn or
right.
whatever that cannot be produced by humans.
Right.
There's something going on. Something is communicating with us in a very, again, gentle and creative way, and actually a very intelligent way when you look at the geometry and the mathematics. So that's one part of the curriculum. Another is certainly the history. I mean, incredible sightings that have happened. And even, you know, we don't have time, but you know, even going back into the Cometa report from France that did an extensive study of these phenomena, and their conclusion is that we are being visited by something. There is something anomalous that is in our skies that cannot be explained. Okay, so, you know, the bottom line here is that we need to get this topic out in the open. You know, it took us 17 centuries before the advent of the microscope to understand and believe that there are zillions of microorganisms, living entities all around us, even in our bodies. Some are beneficial, some are pathogens. We've learned to deal with it. And just like we don't see gamma rays or radio waves or whatever, they're real. And just because we don't have the technology yet, like in this case with these unexplained phenomena, to definitively define what they are, it doesn't mean they're not real. We may just be looking on an AM dial for an FM frequency. So it's time we all join together and get prepared. I always say to the kids, even with my AIDS and teen pregnancy and substance abuse programs, that education is the best protection. And, you know, that's why, you know, to me, and people have a choice to look at the data or not, but the more you study it and the more you look at it, the more you know that something is out there trying to communicate with us and trying to raise our awareness and wake us up to the fact that we're not alone in the universe.
I think that your project on the school curriculum involving this topic is really inspiring, and it's a step in getting towards disclosure, in my opinion. What else do we need to get to full disclosure?
Right. I don't think it's going to happen with the government and military. And that's my whole project in itself, including the curriculum is, and the book and the documentary is a grassroots project.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it's going to come. The more people see things that are unusual or curious about them and start looking at the data.
Right.
Looking at the data. And even with the curriculum, we're going to be introducing critical thinking. You know, what if we're not alone? I mean, who's discussing that with kids?
Right.
Right.
You know, what, not only, you know, what do we, you know, how would that change our world as we know it, but what would we say to them about us? I mean, there's so many things that we can explore on that behalf. On the other side, you know, critical thinking. If we can't resolve our own conflicts peacefully, how can we expect? And maybe that's why they haven't fully communicated with us. They're doing one person at a time, okay?
Yeah.
And with these sightings. Because look how the military reacts. It's right away a threat. It's right away, you know, get those jets out there to intercept it or shoot it down or whatever. So, you know, just to get them thinking, how can we start resolving our own conflicts so we can communicate and have relationships with other intelligences, as well as certainly the science of this. And now that quantum physics is starting to open up and quantum mechanics is talking about lots of other dimensions, string theory, 10, 11 other dimensions, other times
right.
and spaces along with ours, that's why I'm sharing the missing time data, because
right.
if there's other times and spaces along with ours, why is it such a leap to think that there might be other intelligences in those other times and spaces, just as we're in this time and space?
Hey, I say that a lot.
Yeah, and that our time and space is primitive. What we think is of time is primitive. Past,
yes.
present, and future is primitive. That there's a lot more of a new reality out there. So that's why I'm sharing the missing time data, and hopefully science will take a look at it, and maybe it'll help and open that door a little bit more. But in the meantime, you know, I hope your listeners will take a look at the website and maybe take a peek at the book and the documentary, and you know, learn the rest of the story. And it's a lot more than just the Phoenix Lights. That's just one of the impetuses that propelled myself and others to really look further into this phenomenon, because it's fascinating, if nothing else.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
It's a fascinating topic. And so people can go to thephoenixlights.net, or they can also just search. Its first search result on Google is if you type in Phoenix Lights.
Right. And it'll come up. It'll come up usually first or second with Wikipedia, whatever. But also if they're on Facebook, Phoenix Lights Network, because we try to keep things up to date. There's lots of different programs still coming on, and Travel Channel and National Geographic and other things coming up. So we keep everybody up to date, and sightings that are similar as well. So, you know, I hope people will join us there as well.
Great. Okay, well, thank you so much for coming on. It's been really interesting, and we're going to have a profile in which month, Cheryl?
We're going to have a profile with Dr. Lynn in either the October or November issue, so we'll be going
okay.
even more in-depth with Dr. Lynn there, too.
Okay,
thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it, because this is the most important thing, is just getting the information out there, raising awareness, and shows like this just helps, you know, people learn that this happened and, you know, some of the facts, and hopefully they'll look further. Thank you so much.
Great.
Definitely.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dr. Vicky Tai, everyone, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow. You know, I just listening to, you know, Dr. Kitai, it's like this is a woman who, you know, she has an amazing education. She's incredibly intelligent, and yet she is involved in research that people in her field would consider fringe or pseudo or just, you know, completely insane. I mean, what were your thoughts talking to Dr. Kitai, Karen?
Well, you know, I really found her fascinating. And, of course, I've seen the Phoenix Lights twice, which I mentioned in the interview, I'm sure. I missed the first part of the interview because I had to run and pick Tanner up from golf. I mean, you know, like listening back to it. But
right.
So I, when I first saw the movie, I thought, okay, we need to talk to this woman. And I think that for me, the most remarkable thing are the conclusions that she's reached, that it's time to wake up, that that what these sightings and these mass sightings are saying is, hey, everybody, wake up, get your crap together, and, you know, or you're going to be in trouble. And so to me, you know, that's one of the things I find fascinating. Of course, the other thing is that she is a doctor. She's a scientist. Her husband is a doctor. He's a scientist.
Right.
And yet they have looked at this very objectively, evaluated it. You hear her talking about all of the data. And they believe that there's something there that's beyond the average, ordinary explanations like the flares.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm listening to her, and, you know, she brings up the whole how we can't even get along. And she's right. How are we ever going to get along with something that is not of this world when we can't even get along with, you know, our neighbor who is of a different religion or a different, you know, color? And it's so true. We can't even get along with our own kind. How are we going to get along with, you know, anybody else that's out there?
Well, xenophobia is something that's inherent in the human species, unfortunately.
Sure.
It's probably arising from, if you believe in evolution, which I happen to, because I think the world is older than 6,000 years.
Absolutely.
But it's an evolutionary thing that arose out of when we were prey and when we were hunter-gatherers and when it was dangerous to interact with not your own people. Unfortunately, we still have the instinct, and we have to move into our higher selves, our higher sense of who we are, to get beyond that. And that's tough.
It really is. I mean, how are you going to get along with anybody with purple skin from the planet, you know, Venus, whatever? It's just, we got to learn to stop, you know, killing each other here first, blowing ourselves up, and, you know, whatever.
And Hollywood does not help.
No.
How many feel-good alien movies of the year are there? E.T.? Okay, Cheryl, pop on. You're the movie person. I've never watched movies. Name some feel-good alien movies. Go.
Oh, God. What?
Yeah. Species. No.
No, that's not a feel-good. I'm dying.
Some chick that wanted to, like, screw mankind and then kill him.
I guess A Close Encounter would be kind of feel-good. Yeah. You already said E.T.
Yeah, are there any others that you can think of?
Well, I think, what's the movie
called? Stood Still.
Karen, you know, tonight I'm really absent-minded. The one where the alien comes and then they're going to destroy the world, but then they figure out mankind has hope and then they don't destroy the world. What is that one? They just remade an old one.
The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Sorry, Rick.
But my point is, it's most of them.
All right, I'm getting off because I obviously can't think straight tonight. Sorry.
My point is that most alien movies that you see are more the one with Mel Gibson before it was batshit crazy.
Signs.
M. Night Shyamalan. Yeah, Signs. That one. They're more that kind of thing than they are, you know.
Yeah, they're more like menacing than, you know, anything.
Well, even then, you know, when Hollywood gets a hold of anything that even smacks of the paranormal, they usually find a way of really screwing it up. Like, last year when the movie Battle of Los Angeles came out, I mean, it shows, like, a full-on invasion, claiming that this is based on a true story. Now, anybody who knows...
I don't remember an invasion.
There wasn't. And in 1942, when that happened, all of a sudden, it's like the city of Los Angeles just went nuts. There's something flying in the air. They put the lights on it, and then they just start blasting the hell out of it. And nothing ever came down. Hundreds and thousands of people in the city claimed that they had seen whatever it was that they were shooting at. Whatever it was that they were shooting at never fired a shot back. And in fact, if I remember correctly, two people actually died because of all of the from shrapnel and from the loud noises of the missiles and the guns and all that going on.
Yeah, heart attack.
Guy had a heart attack from it.
Wow.
You know, so it's like any time that they ever get a hold of anything, they find a way to seriously just F it up, you know?
Well, we have a fine tradition if
Skyline.
You look back to, like... Oh, go ahead, Cheryl.
I'm sorry, Skyline. I mean, that was just horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, horrible. It was just... did you see that one, Rick? I know Karen didn't, but...
I, I think I watched like 10 minutes of it.
I noticed she didn't ask.
It was horrible. It's like, you really don't have many feel good movies
like
that.
Well, you know, but it goes back, because I'd like to take you back to the original War of the Worlds that Orson Welles did as a radio broadcast. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what happened? It sparked panic in the streets.
Oh, yeah. Mass wackiness.
Yeah, exactly. So, Starman. Chad just
See, Chad's quick, man. He just
He remembers. He said Earth Girls are easy, too. You know, there's a feel-good alien movie.
Yeah, he says Mars Attacks.
Mars women.
Mars Attacks, didn't they, like, cut everybody's head?
Women on the moon.
All right, then.
Anyway, So, what I think is really interesting is, and I've mentioned it probably at the top of the hour and during the broadcast, is the timing of the mass sighting. Because, of course, Dr. Lynn and her husband had some sightings in a couple years leading up to this mass sighting. And then it was the night that everybody was out looking at the sky because of the Hale-Bopp comet, and this thing essentially, you know, like cruised. It cruised the state.
Kind of stole the show from Hale-Bopp.
It did. But Hale-Bopp grabbed it back, because wasn't that the one where the crazy cult drank the Kool-Aid or whatever it was and killed themselves? Wasn't that Hale-Bopp?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. The Heaven's Gate people.
Yeah.
Heaven's Gate, that's what they were called.
And they were out here in San Diego.
Hard to...
Yeah.
Okay.
But you know what I always find, what I find interesting about just that general area of the American Southwest, of course, you know, Roswell being there, and, you know, Area 51 is out that way. I'm not saying that I believe necessarily that Area 51 has anything to do with UFOs, but there seems to just be a lot of sightings in the American Southwest, and it kind of makes me wonder if this is like, you know, a window area, kind of like a Lothian
spot. But the American Southwest, don't they have like, isn't Sedona out that way? Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's kind of that spiritual contingent with a lot of psychics. And a lot of kind of people who have more progressive new age type of spiritual philosophies. Right. And that could be part of it, you know. And when I asked Dr. Lynn about that, she actually sort of seemed like, well, you know, no, they happen all over the world. But I did ask Stanton Friedman about that many years ago, a couple, 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, it's because there was a nuclear test range there and Area 51 is there. And there are all of these things there that makes it attractive to these, whatever it is that's coming in. The other thing that Dr. Lynn touched on that I have always found really fascinating is that when you hear people describe some of these mass sightings, to me they sound a lot like religious sightings, like Marian apparitions, and like what happened at Fatima. And
or what Ezekiel witnessed in the Old Testament.
Right. And so I find that just so fascinating that there's this biblical connection that maybe people have been seeing these for not centuries, but millennia.
Well, I was watching I know we don't really, you know, like to talk about other people's shows on the, but I'm a real big fan of 30 Odd Minutes, Jeff Belanger's show. And I was watching
How
it on iTunes
you?
and just and kidding. He had a guy. What was that?
Nothing. Carry on.
You can be a fan of other people's shows. It's okay.
Oh, okay. And he had a guy on there. He was talking about an author, you know, Out of Place and Out of Time. Of course, you have the paintings from the 15th century of the Madonna and the baby Jesus, and up in the corner is a UFO, or what looks or appears to be a UFO. And a lot of people look at this and was like, okay, these kind of things were around in the baby Jesus' time. But I've also had people explain it that this was a representation of communing with the divine.
Well, but maybe the divine are really aliens.
Exactly. I think that was the point that I was trying to make. Yes. It's possible.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. There could be a connection. Who knows?
Yeah.
You know, that's why they're, that's the you part.
You know what I thought was very interesting
that
Dr. Lynn talked about at the end? She's actually working on curriculum for K-12 students on this topic. And if she can get that integrated into, you know, school study, I think that would be outstanding. Didn't you think that was like a really cool project that she was working on?
I was fascinated by that.
Yeah.
You know, here's the thing, is that when you look at in our own, like, just with Earth people, okay, every generation seemed to progressively get just a little bit better than the generation before at accepting people with differences and accepting, you know, whether it's somebody is a different color or somebody has a different sexuality or whatever it is. My kids are way more accepting of that than even we were. And way more accepting than our parents were. And I mean, some of the stuff my grandparents used to say, oh my God.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
We're shocking.
Yeah.
So we get a little better with each successive generation. So maybe a few generations down the line, the schools will be ready for that kind of curriculum. True. I think it'd be pretty hard pressed now to do much with it because, you know, they don't want anything other than reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Well, I don't think that that schools will even be ready yet, at least for years, to talk about anything other than evolution or, you know, in, you know, some schools, creation with evolution. I think that the whole idea of us being visited and our ancient past being visited now is still pretty much considered anathema by the educational system in our country. So it's going to be a long, long time before they would even blink their eye at that. You know, maybe another 50, 60 years down the line.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Each successive generation gets a little more accepting of new ideas. Yeah. And it gets a little less hard to believe. And who knows, maybe this group of kids with their, you know, Harry Potter and vampire reading will be a lot more open to things than our generation is and the generations before us.
But sparkly teenage vampires? I don't know.
Sparkling teenage vampires. That's right. That's right. Hey, they got a final movie coming out, you know.
Oh, they do? Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Rick, don't pretend like you didn't already pre-purchase your tickets. You know you have them.
I'm standing in line right now. I'm already growing my hair so it looks like Edward.
Yeah, I thought.
Yeah, well, they get married in this one, you know. I think they might even have a baby. Oh, yeah, there might be two movies left. I don't know.
I don't follow that one, Karen. I don't know. I don't have any info.
I don't really either. Yeah. I have no idea, but you know, we need something to fill in the massive gap left by
Harry Potter. Yeah.
I think my nerdiness extends to maybe Lord of the Rings and the Lord of the Rings trilogy and beyond that. I'm not quite a nerd anymore.
So you know what? I have never seen the Lord of the Rings movies.
Oh my God! Are you kidding me?
No.
It was like medieval Star Wars. It was awesome.
Jim and Tanner watch it repeatedly, and Kevin, no, never seen one. I've seen like little snippets of it, and I just it. Meh.
Really?
I've read all of the books and liked the books. Mm-hmm. I'm not a movie person.
First, you tell me today you've never heard of The Walking Dead, and now
never I heard of The Walking Dead
that you have never seen what? A Lord of
I
the Rings.
I thought Karen was joking.
I'm really upset right now
about The Walking Dead.
I really honestly thought you were joking. The show is like huge right now.
No, I never heard of it.
Oh, okay.
So, no, do you remember when we were in break and we were talking, and I said that I actually don't like even watch live TV. I just record what I want to watch. Let's see. What shows have I watched? Dexter?
Well, that's good.
Let's see. What else do I watch? I watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which has its premiere tonight.
That's hysterical.
Yeah.
It's a hysterical show. I enjoy one that hasn't been on in years, which is the one with Jason Bateman and the banana stand, Arrested Development.
Mm-hmm. Is that coming back?
There's going to be a movie.
Oh, fantastic. I love that show. That was the greatest show that nobody watched. I don't understand that.
It was the best show. It was awesome. Yeah. So I don't watch a lot of live stuff on TV. We record stuff and, you know, I'll watch it. I sort of stopped watching stuff. I don't know, maybe 5-10 years ago. I'll occasionally watch like one of the like the Real Housewives shows just to see how disgusting they all are. I don't know.
It's all right.
Yeah.
You got other things to do.
Yeah, you know, we go to, if Jim makes me, I'll go to a movie. We just went to see something. I can't even remember what it was. It was that memorable. Oh, it was the Paul Rudd movie.
Oh, it was that movie with that guy?
My Idiot Brother.
Oh, okay.
Or Idiot Brother, which was actually, if you haven't seen it, it's a really sweet movie. It's not an uproarious comedy at all. It's a really sweet movie. So yeah, I don't watch a Jim and Tanner and Kevin like movies and TV, and I'd rather read a book, or I don't know. I'm kind of a nerd. I know that comes as a shock.
We're not surprised.
Yes, it does.
It's so quiet that you guys must have been stunned by that revelation.
I wear my nerddom on my sleeve. I have absolutely no problem. I'm like Chris Hardwick from G4, man. I'm just like a total uber nerd. So,
oh, you know what I've been watching on TV a little bit lately? The Mary Tyler Moore Show and MASH.
Wow.
That's right.
Classics.
That show bored the hell out of me. I'm sorry. MASH, it was so preachy and so pretentious. I just got, ugh.
It had an anti-war message. I thought that you, my progressive friend, would love it.
See, but that's fine though. But there were oftentimes episodes where it just got really preachy and soapboxy, and I was like, I don't even want to watch this anymore.
Really?
Really?
I always thought it was kind of entertaining. So but tonight on FX at like 10 o'clock, I think. Which means it's already passed. No, it'll be on as soon as we get off the air. You have to go to work, right?
Yes, I do.
Oh, so it'll be on in the flyover states at 10 o'clock. I think it's FX. Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Best show on television.
I'll stream it later.
Don't watch it with your kids.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Adult. Don't watch it with your kids.
Adult only.
Oh, so, yes. And oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I have no idea. I've been up since like 4:30, so I'm just babbling like a moron at this point.
That's quite all right. The future world's greatest psychical and researcher woke me up a little bit early today, so I'm going into a long day being very tired.
So, Cheryl?
Yes, Karen?
You're going to have to pull Rick and I out of the fire, because we're just blithering idiots at this point.
We're dying here.
Would you please tell us what is on next week on... You know.
I will do that. I will do that. I will tell you what's on next week. We're going to have Marley Gibson on, and she is a paranormal fiction and nonfiction author.
I've read her books.
Yeah, that's September 22nd. Mm-hmm. And the week after that, we're going to have Kurt Strutz and Justin Krogstad from Paranormal Generation. And I know Rick has seen that. So, Rick, I don't know if you want to say a few words.
I really liked it, you know, and you know, they're from Illinois, so, you know, of course I'm
a little bit. They're from the flyover state.
They're from the flyover state as well.
So you, Rick, have a speaking engagement.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be, it's kind of like my Disney World. It's going to be the Stanley Hotel in May.
I'm jealous.
Haunted Entertainment's function. And I think I'm going to be speaking. At least that's kind of the way I understood it. But it's going to be a lot of fun, and it's great because Jamie and Theo, they're going to come along with, and she has her brother who lives in Denver, so, you know, we're going to take like a week and go see him and, you know, have a couple days at the Stanley.
Yep, and I will be appearing at the Port Gamble Ghost Conference last weekend in October. That's in Port Gamble, Washington. Lots of really good speakers. The guy that wrote the book about Starvation Heights, which is a great story if you've never heard about it. It's about a doctor who gave people the starvation cure for all that ailed them, and a lot of people died there, and it's a ridiculously haunted location out here in Washington State. His name is Gary Olson. He's going to be speaking there. It sounds like it's going to be a really great conference. So go Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to ask what's the name of the conference that you're going? Mine's Frontier Paracon 2.
Port Gamble Ghost Conference.
Outstanding.
I will speaking nowhere.
Cheryl and Chad will be appearing in their kitchen in about 20 minutes. Swing on by. I hear it's corn dogs.
Oh my God! I had corn dogs for lunch today. How'd you know that? That's weird, Karen.
Because I'm psychic.
There you go.
Because Robin Murphy told me.
Hey, speaking of Robin Marie, real quick, I just want to say thank you to our regular chatters, including Robin Marie. And so, yeah, thanks to the chat roomers.
You
and
make us feel better about ourselves.
We love them.
Yeah, you make us think that people actually like us.
People care about us. You like us. You really, really like us. Okay, well, before Rick and I blither on much more, Cheryl and Chad need to go have their burritos in the kitchen, and Rick has to get to work, and I gotta crash. I'm tired. So, everybody, come back next week. We're going to be talking with Marley Gibson. I'm really looking forward to that. I've read her books, got lots of questions for her. One of her books was co-written with Dave Schrader. It's about ghost hunting with kids. The other two are a couple of teen books, but they're a lot of fun, even for for grown-ups to read. They're the Teen Ghost Huntress series, so check those out as well. You can find them at, I believe, marleygibson.com. So,
it should be a good show.
Yes. Thank you, everybody. We'll be back next week, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, and other times in the flyover states. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Night. Thanks for listening.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.